Weekend Breakfast
with Refilwe Mpakanyane on 702.
And we head on over to the movies now with Gail Edmonds, our resident movie critic. Gail, good morning.
Hi, Refilwe.
So yes, you, yeah?
No, I was just going to say it is Women's Month, so we are theming that way.
All right, fantastic. Well, you've done the millennial thing and put together a nice listicle for us because we love them. How many have you got, first of all? And I'm keen to find out what your process was in putting this all together.
Well, I actually have got it down to 5, which, as you know, is extremely difficult.
Sure.
And my process was to ask a whole lot of people who I see on WhatsApp and to think myself. And to ask people what they, because you know you do remember some of the iconic ones, and then someone will say to you, "Oh, remember that one? Oh, remember?" And so you end up with a long list of like 200.
Always.
And then you have to try and comb it down. So it's what you call an extremely inadequate list, but I think for a short insert, 5 is probably as much as you can get.
Well, it's just as well you're not tabling a report in Parliament and pretending that this is a real survey. So yeah, let's start with the list and see what you've got for us.
Okay, so 9 to 5, which in 1980 was a huge breakthrough movie, mm-hmm. with Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton, and it was sort of this sort of a version of the secretarial pool fights back. If you'll remember, it's hilarious, where the dreadful sexist boss who sexually harasses Dolly Parton's character takes all the credit for Lily Tomlin's character. And Jane Fonda, of course, she's had to go and get her job because her husband's run off with his own secretary. So the three of them sort of get back at their rather awful boss. And, of course, it has one of the most iconic songs, which
yes.
Dolly Parton, in her usual fashion, wrote in about 15 minutes. You know, she doesn't exactly break a sweat to write iconic themes.
That, so
I think that's always the good one.
I think that movie belongs in an interesting genre of those getting ahead in your working career and
yes.
or having to go back to work or back to your career because the husband has left you. I immediately think of Waiting to Exhale.
Almost
my mind goes to First Wives Club as well. And yeah, I'm sure there are many, many more examples.
Now you see all those, like First Wives Club's another one that fits into this category. And then, of course, the next one on the list, and Working Girl, if you remember, with Melanie Griffith and Sigourney Weaver. Now, Sigourney Weaver does make it onto this list, but in Alien.
Yes.
1979's Alien, because, of course, Ripley, her character, was a boundary-busting character at the time, sort of giving the woman of the film, the big gun and the sort of ability to get rid of the aliens.
So and saving the world, one. Saving the world,
and
Gail.
Saving the world, of course, saving the world from those dreadful, terrifying, do you remember how terrifying it was the first time you saw those?
They still are, actually, I must say. They actually
are.
They still are, yeah. Terrifying, terrifying design. They did well,
and
yeah.
And actually, she was up for the role. It was her or Meryl Streep, funnily enough.
Oh, no.
And you can't imagine Ripley played by anybody but Sigourney Weaver, but apparently the two of them were up for this role. So I think Alien's definitely one for the sort of, you know, women can be alien hunters too kind of list. So that was that sort of thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And then one that I do think, and it is the reason this one popped percolation, I think, to the top, is that it is on Netflix at the moment, and that's Practical Magic.
Yes.
If you remember the 1998 film with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman, and it had Diane Wiest in it, and Stockard Channing, who I just love. She was, you remember, as Rizzo in Grease.
Yeah.
But they are small-town witches, and they have this curse hanging over them. But I think the funny part of this is that it's kind of a lesson in how not to get rid of your no-good boyfriend, Nicole Kidman. Sort of accidentally knocks hers off, and then they decide to bring him back. And I think that it's just a really fun film, and it is a very strong female film, and it sort of throws the whole idea of witches being bad and cursed on its head. So that one, I think, is kind of fun as well.
I love your celebration of Women's Month. Yes, go ahead. What else is on your list?
Okay, and then Frozen, of course. 2013's Frozen. And I think the reason is that if you had a little girl who came to Disney movies from then on, she need never watch the ones that sleep and do housework. Because I must say, my own daughter has some serious issues with Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, and their sisterhood. She says, but what do these, you know, and they were getting there with
Mulan. What are they good for? What do they do?
There. Yeah, exactly. What are they doing? So it's so boring. And you know, they were getting there with Tangled. But this one, the big break with this one is that Elsa not only gets really mad, but she also doesn't want or find a prince anywhere, and from beginning to end, she is princeless. And I think that is the key reason why Frozen is an important film for this list, because not all princesses need a prince. And I think that's why I included that one. So it's also a boundary buster.
You know, in fact, now that I think of, she's princeless throughout, and when she does kind of bag the boy, it is on her terms at the end, and she gives him the gift, first of all, just, you know, obviously to make up for wrecking his sleigh. But if I remember correctly, before he kisses her, he doesn't just grab her and do whatever he thinks she wants him to do. He actually requires and gets her consent. May I? May we? Should we? Something like that, as he bumbles through the phrase, right?
Yes, and that is, funnily enough, one of the things that with Sleeping Beauty that bothers my daughter the most. She's like, "What? Why is he kissing her when she's sleeping?
Why is he kissing a roofied girl?"
Exactly. So I think that in the many ways, Frozen is a very important genre buster in the princess trope.
I absolutely love it. I don't know. I think there must have been some incredible subliminal messaging programming in that movie, because I must have seen it. I've seen it more than 50 times, if not more than 100 times. And I could watch it again. I've just let go and let God. And when Frozen is on, we will watch it, and I will sing along and I will recite the lines, as I'm sure many parents
can relate to. Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
We can never let it go, basically.
So there's one more thing on your list, which is Bad Moms. Talk to me about why this made it on.
Okay, well, I found it very funny. There is one scene in it that is very disturbing to me, because even if you are deciding not to put dinner on the table or take the children to soccer, there's one scene where Mila Kunis drives with her daughter in the car without a seatbelt on. Now, no mother of any description would ever do that on purpose. So that's the only thing about this movie that really bothered me. Other than that, I think it's quite a nice sort of tongue out at the kind of mothers that are portrayed on TV.
Sure.
And that idea of when you drop your kids at school, there's always a couple of those mothers who look like they've stepped out of the salon at 7:30 in the morning.
Are they, and where are they from?
And who are they? Well, who are these alien people? So I think that this film was sort of the three of them all holding it together to some extent, and then just going, you know what, stuff it. We're not actually going to try and fulfill this, only to discover that even those mothers in the full makeup at 7:30 are pretty much also putting up a facade.
Absolutely. Gail Edmonds, always an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll catch up next week with more movie reviews.